You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to The People's Voice. I'm very happy to be here today. This is Wes Berry, and I'm here with our co-host, Ryan Toll. Ryan, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Wes. How are you?
Great. Hey, you know, I was wondering whether or not this this whole thing with the anti-Semitic cartoons that the New York Times is publishing. Did you hear about that?
Just vaguely. I'd have to do a little research on it, but go ahead.
Well, you know, what it is, they've got a drawing of President Trump with a yarmulke on, holding a leash of a dog with a Star of David on him and Netanyahu's face on the dog. And apparently after they published it in the international edition, they got such a backlash that they decided that it was inappropriate. They didn't apologize for it or anything like that. They just pulled it back. And at the same time today, there was a shooting in a mosque – not a mosque. I'm sorry.
A synagogue
in California that killed one and wounded, I think, three others.
That's what I read.
Doesn't it seem as though that there's a little bit too much of an uptick in this whole – anti-Semitic thing?
Oh, absolutely, and I, you know, I would say they probably pulled the cartoon because the Jewish folks were just very angry to be related to Donald Trump in a picture, and they didn't like that. So they
That's an interesting take.
It is.
I also have,
his hair does not work with the yarmulke.
Yeah.
FYI.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It seems to me as though you know, there's a sea change that's occurring in American politics, where the Democrats, anyways, are moving a little bit away from Israel in the game, and I think they need to be a little more careful.
I would say, I mean, for all intents and purposes, for the last at least 30 or 40 years, Great Britain aside, but Israel's probably been our closest ally overall. So I think that would be a mistake at anybody's part to shun them. Yeah. Not to mention, I do a lot of work with a company that's based in Israel, so that's how I make my living.
I hear you. It just seems a little off in the scheme of things to have the New York Times put something like that out there.
Sure.
And you know, naturally, it's easier after you've done it. To get the feedback from other people to recognize that maybe you made a mistake in something. But this seems to be more than a mistake. Anytime they're going to dress somebody up in religious garb and then someone else up in religious garb and model them after a dog seems a little over the top to me.
Well, I'd have to agree with you there, Wes. I think that there's, you know, that probably of particular faiths through the last 100 years, the Jewish faith has taken the most amount of, I'm going to use the word abuse. I mean, there's probably stronger or better words to use. I think, you know, that doesn't make sense to me. And also, I don't really understand that cartoon without seeing it. I'm going to Google it right now.
I understand. And that's a great idea. While that's going on, I heard a joke the other day. And I know I'm not usually one with the jokes, you know, but I found this rather interesting. Apparently, it involves Monica Lewinsky, and I can't tell whether or not this is something that I should write a retraction to or not. You know, sort of like that whole thing with the New York Times where they're not sure whether it's appropriate or not. But anyways, it goes like this. So she's walking along a beach, and she sees a lamp laying on the ground on the sand. She picks it up, dusts it off, and poof, there's a genie. And lo and behold, the genie pops out and says, hey, I'm going to give you one wish and one wish only. There's a lot of issues with wishes right now. Some of them are being considered politically incorrect, and we want to make sure that we stay properly on target and in our interpretation of how someone asks for a wish. So she thinks for a minute. She thinks and she said, well, I don't need fame. I'm famous. I don't really need money. I've made a lot of money off that fame. You know what? I've always had a little bit of trouble with my love handles, like a lot of us have. And she says, you know what? I think that'll be it. I want that cured. I want my love handles cured permanently. I never want to have to, you know, deal with the whole love handle issue again. And all of a sudden, poof, her ears disappear.
So, you know, I didn't know where you're going with that, Wes, but I did. I knew ahead of time I probably could have told you you'd probably need to retract before you even say it.
All right. Well, you know, listen, the New York Times did not apologize.
That's WesleyBerry.com, folks.
They just decided that it was perhaps not in good taste. Uh-huh. And you know, I guess I could say that.
Well, they did. In the article I Googled here real quickly, they did say they acknowledged there were some anti-Semitic tropes. So you're right. They did not apologize, but they did acknowledge that there was a certain anti-Semitic. I would think of all – I mean, this is – careful how I say it. But I would think of all places, you would think the New York Times would have a certain amount of sympathy towards
I don't think they can now because they're a liberal, democratic –
Say
propaganda
it.
Okay, machine.
All right, fair.
And so I don't think that they think in those terms. I think they just are following the party line.
So is the argument that you think the party has become anti-Semitic?
Well, I think that's self-evident. Public relations campaign is running that.
I have a hard time thinking that a party that historically has supported all I'm going to use the word minorities, quote unquote minorities, would then move away from that.
I don't know. You know, they claim that they keep insisting that Donald Trump is anti-Semitic, and
he's anti a lot of things.
And his wife, his current wife, is Jewish. She was born. That's her ethnic heritage.
Is his mistress?
His wife.
Oh,
his wife. Melina or whatever her name is.
Melania.
There you go. Yeah. His grandchildren are Jewish.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
His daughter is Jewish, one of them.
Yeah.
Converted. His son-in-law is Jewish. And he recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. I don't know why they think he's anti-Semitic.
So listen, let me take that one step further. I think that sort of speaks to the argument I've made a lot in the past, both on the radio and now about Donald Trump, which mm-hmm. is that he is in support of whatever benefits him. So perhaps he's not anti-Semitic because it is in support, which is good, right? In this particular case.
I don't know. I just don't
understand. I'm going to say something nice about him. You should be shocked.
I guess. I just don't understand how he can be considered anti-Semitic. But I guess, you know, that's just something that sounds good to throw around.
I don't even know that you're going to disagree with me on this. But I would say that Donald Trump is in support of anything that props him up. I think if there was a league of
Extraordinary you know, Gentlemen?
Yeah, which is an excellent movie. Sean Connery is not in many bad movies, I got to tell you.
That's true.
Apparently, there's a comic book that's based on too. But in a side note, the Avengers movie came out just this late. It was excellent.
Did you get to see
I did.
That?
I went and saw it, yeah.
You did?
Skipped out of work early on Friday and went.
You yeah. really? Yeah. Skipped out of work?
I told my boss. He was having a colonoscopy, so worked out good.
Yeah, well, I'm not one who's in favor of colonoscopies, but that's a whole other story. So you saw the Avengers. That's good. I'm happy. Yeah. I am a little upset about that whole genre, that whole theme or whatever you want to call it, those things. They have raccoons talking.
Yeah. Yeah. Rocket. Yeah.
And I'm not one to endorse raccoons talking.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like that part of the whole thing, you know?
You know, so what we should do on the show, we should like come up with stuff like that. So we should write a letter to the White House web address and ask Trump if he's in favor of the talking raccoon.
I think we could do that. I think we should try to get him to call in next time.
We could try that.
I think that would be a good idea.
I think he would love your support, Wes.
Well, you know, I don't know. He'd have to earn it.
I'd probably end up in jail at some point. But I mean, it'd be all right. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit. We talked a little bit about that shooting at the synagogue, and you know, it's no secret that as left leaning as I am, I'm a bit of a firearms enthusiast. We've talked about that in the past,
right? You must be very conflicted about that.
You know what? It causes some problems at home. You know, my wife is not a fan.
You going to go north on this?
No, we could go to Oliver North, but listen. California has the strictest gun control in the country, maybe not more than Chicago or New York, but let's say equal to Chicago or New York. Mm-hmm. And yet that's where the shooting was. But my wife pointed out, well, that's probably why there was a lower body count, right? That was her argument because they now I think she was just doing that to irk me, but the point is that, and I don't think you're against this either, Wes. I think there probably is some room for some quote unquote common sense gun control. I just don't know that anybody that's talking about it has any common sense today on either side.
You know, you're probably pretty close on that. Let's think about this for a minute. Chicago definitely has among the toughest gun controls,
yep.
And they still have the most murders currently per capita, which is a real disappointment to those of us who are native Detroiters because that was something that we could claim.
Famous for that,
And so, you know, the thing about passing legislation or laws to control different things is lots of times they have unintended consequences, of course, but also it doesn't matter whether you pass a law or not. It's whether it's enforced and if it's enforceable. Some laws simply aren't enforceable. If the marijuana laws had really been enforceable, the legalization that's going on would not be occurring.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And maybe it would be nice if you could snap your fingers and have marijuana disappear from society, but it isn't realistic to expect that to happen.
Right. Well, it grows in nature too, I think. So,
you know, it's very difficult to assume that just because you pass laws that you're going to have the results that you're hoping for. The only thing that's going to happen if they make more gun laws is you're going to have more people who are violating the laws who are law-abiding citizens in every other respect. So gun control laws are very, very confusing. You know, just a few weeks ago, we had a relative of my wife's family that was in from Hong Kong who was raised in mainland China and who now lives in Hong Kong.
Not a lot of guns in civilian hands in mainland China, I would guess.
Not at all, or in Hong Kong. And while he was here, you know, he's never driven a car either. He lives in Hong Kong in a nice place, but he's never driven a car. It's a different world. And I was talking with him, and one of the things that came up were, you know, America's fascination with guns. And I offered to take him shooting, and he was like, you know, scared to death of the idea, and that only criminals have guns, and there's no reason to have a, you know. He also is very concerned about what's going to happen in Hong Kong in the next few months because there's supposed to be a significant change in the transition that's going on there then. And, you know, he won't even be involved in certain types of industries because the penalties for making a mistake are so aggressive that he's scared to death of it. So he's in real estate, but he won't do commercial real estate because if he does commercial real estate, it's too easy to go to jail.
We might take for granted some of the things in this country, the liberties that we have, right? That I, you know, you can fail at a business and it doesn't mean you go to jail.
Unbelievable. You know, he taught in a Christian school at one time in Hong Kong. He taught English. And he's concerned that he may very well be on a list.
Oh, yeah.
Because of his affiliation with a Christian organization and also the whole English thing. Apparently, they've stopped making English a requirement to learn in China.
Well, that's a little scary.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, we really do have tremendous liberties here. And the people in Hong Kong have always had those liberties up until several years ago now. But the threat of the transition that's coming is scaring them to death.
I think change is always scary, though. I think no matter where you live, I think that's why we go through all of the turmoil we go through every time there's an election cycle, right?
Yeah.
Is there's the people who don't 100% agree with the president. And by the way, in my lifetime, I don't ever remember anyone get elected that there wasn't roughly 50% of the population that was unhappy about. And
you know, that's interesting that you bring that up because Donald Trump was at Mar-a-Lago recently. And
I'm shocked. Was he golfing?
He was walking along the beach.
Oh.
And believe it or not, he found a lamp in the sand. So he picked the lamp up and he rubbed it and poof, all of a sudden a genie popped out. And the genie, you know, was there and Donald Trump said, well, do I get three wishes? And he said, no. Supply chain is messed up. We're not – one wish only. And he thought for a while, and he thought for a while, and he said, you know what? Here's a map of Israel. And see these countries around it? I'd like to have peace in that region. I'd really like to have peace in that region. And the genie shook his head, and he said, you know, I can do a lot of things. I don't know that I can do that. You're going to have to, you know, pick something else, you know? And he says, okay, well, let's see. I'd really like to have, you know, about half the people in the country love me, and the other half really don't. I'd really like to have all the people in the country really love me and support me and vote for me. And the genie's response was, let me take another look at the map.
Right. Yeah.
You know, hey, I'm no genie, but I'd like to thank Donald Trump for wishing for peace in the Middle East. That was very admirable.
Well, you know what? You know, I think there's been war in the Middle East forever, right? Isn't that the saying? And I, you know, but no, I mean, certainly we'd all like. I think everybody would, except maybe the weapons manufacturers and arms dealers. I think everybody else would like peace in the world.
I think so too. But the Middle East, I don't know that we're going to ever see that.
Well, it you know, more blood's been spilled in the name of God than any other. I mean, that's the.
Well, the only way you get peace in a situation like the Middle East is to have a victor,
right?
And to annihilate the opposition,
right?
And I don't think that's in the cards either way. And as long as they keep the status quo, the solution is unattainable. And I'm not saying that I'm in favor of it being solved, because I don't want it solved that way. So I think it's a situation that just is going to have to be endured.
One of the things I've always wondered about, it speaks to that, but I think there's a larger conversation, is at the end of World War II, take Italy out of it, because you know, that was a weird kind of situation. Russia as well, because they switched sides. I mean, that was they didn't switch sides. They were attacked by their allies.
Right.
But you take Japan and Germany, right? And let's assume there was a percentage of those population that was in agreement with what their government was telling them, right?
Sure.
That the propaganda or the reality of what they were told was.
Yeah.
But then the war ended, and less than a decade later, they were both supplying the United States with goods and services, and we had – so how did that happen at that time? Is that a lack of media, right? So just now when the propaganda is that, oh, everybody's on the same page, that it's all good?
No, it's – here's the deal. That was a result of a victory,
mm-hmm.
and a total overthrow of the prior governments.
Mm-hmm.
Were in place. And it also required an atomic bomb being dropped twice.
Well, for Japan, but Germany was already.
And in terms of Germany, it required fire burning of cities to defeat the people, not just the army, to destroy the will, that were just as tragic to the civilian populations of Dresden and Hamburg as they were to Nagasaki and Hiroshima.
Well, hey, listen. So, I mean, maybe that does speak to the whole NRA thing with Oliver North and Wayne LaPierre, right? So North tried to change things, and well, Wayne LaPierre firebombed him.
Well, I mean, this Wayne LaPierre is LaPierre.
LaPierre,
LaPierre. I always thought it was LaPierre, but anyways, he had spent $200,000 on wardrobe expenses that were paid by a supplier of whatever it was to the NRA that paid for it for him instead, even if it was a legitimate expense. When you're taking that sort of a remuneration from one of your suppliers for an enterprise that you're employed by, if that's not wrong, I don't know what is.
Sure.
But worse than that, the nonprofit status of the NRA can be called into question, because those specific individuals, and there were more than, as I understand it, there were other people that were on the board of directors.
That's the NRA texting West right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, it's Ali. Yeah, I'll talk to you later. I'm going to get back to him after the show.
Oh, okay.
But it can be considered as a profit venture.
Sure, yeah, that makes sense, right?
Because it, right. And even if they'd been paid a salary instead, it wouldn't have been quite the same way. It would have been all right. But and the Attorney General of New York, which you might be surprised to hear is a Democrat, has already started to send subpoenas that they can't destroy any information and all this other stuff because they're going to start an investigation. And the although I'll tell you something, I don't know who the NRA's attorneys are. But,
I bet they're good.
But well, they're not as good as they should be. I'll tell you that right now, because the NRA is incorporated in New York.
Oh yeah,
which has
they could be like a Delaware corporation or Rhode Island corporation.
Well, actually, Louisiana Florida, would Louisiana. Be the best for in their case because they'd want a strong authority. In
yeah,
it. And Louisiana is still under Napoleonic Code their laws, so they're different. They're not, but the New York laws are like the most aggressive against nonprofits of any state. And I don't know whether it would be Louisiana or
Texas.
Delaware.
Texas is probably great for the NRA.
But probably any place other than New York would have been an improvement. So they're going to be held to a very, very, very high standard. And that's going to be a very difficult thing to go through because you know darn well that the Attorney General in New York would like nothing better than to be the one who pulls the rug out from under the nonprofit status of the NRA.
Oh, that would
it would destroy the NRA, and you know, it would almost be impossible to build such a coalition from scratch.
It does seem like, though, in lobby groups in general, whether it be tobacco or NRA or you pick your lobby groups or whether it's a left lobby group, although I can't think one off the top of my head, but there's plenty of them. Doesn't it seem like kind of a total reset button on many of them would make some sense? Because I think they've been around so long to that point. This Wayne LaPierre thing probably shows it's kind of, and I'm not just indicting the NRA. And believe me, if you're a member of the NRA, I'm not threatening the NRA in any way. I feel like it just corruption's been bred through years of allowing them to do it. You know, they're likely the most powerful lobby group in the world or in the country, if not the tobacco lobby.
Well, you know, let's not if we're going to go into that discussion, I'd like to not reference the NRA in it because
I'm sure big things have some, yeah, yes,
right. They're not the ones you want to piss off. Okay?
No.
So the shtick is like this: lobbying. Is everything that a lobbyist does, if you weren't calling a lobbyist, it would be bribery and a crime.
Ah, that's fair.
Okay, there's no difference between bribing someone legally. You know, there's a famous line that I love in The Aviator, the movie.
Oh, yeah. I love that. Yeah.
Where Howard Hughes is engaged in some conversation and he says – one of his minions says to him, well, what do you want me to do, buy the senators? And he says, I don't want them bought. I want it done legally. I want every one of them. You know, I mean, here's the deal. When you're giving someone money and you're expecting nothing in return, you're either stupid – or lying.
Sure.
And when you give people money and your interests are clear what they are, you're encouraging them to come back for more money by doing what you ask them to do. So election reform in this country is something that's long, long, long overdue.
I agree.
And is very complicated. And, you know, I suppose really that if we didn't have lobbyists, we just have more criminals engaged in the process. So maybe it's just a realization of the inevitability of the process, much the way marijuana laws are moving now to say, hey, look, we're not going to be able to stop it. Maybe we can control it a little bit by letting them know that they're not going to have a problem if they're doing this as long as they're abiding by certain reasonable conditions. But boy, I'll tell you something. It's a very confusing issue.
You know what? So I think a lot of laws become very confusing, right? I think there's – I don't want to go back to guns. We were talking about guns. But I recently this morning was on a website that I frequent just looking at some stuff. And for maybe the 500th time I've ever seen it, there was discussion over legal ways to transport long guns within the state of Michigan. And And these people on there that are quote unquote experts on firearms and laws in Michigan, including the attorneys, have very differing opinions of the exact legal way to transport a firearm.
Right.
And I think that, you know, so and that and those laws have been around for a very long time. So I'm sure the marijuana laws are going to be just as confusing.
It is. They will. They will be. And you know, that's one of the reasons why attorneys always like new laws coming up.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
The more confusing you can make the directions, the more often you need an expert. You know. but yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. You know, I should be able to come up with a lawyer joke. You know, I mean, I don't know what's wrong with me today, but oh, I got it. So this father's got three sons, and one of them becomes a doctor, the other one an accountant, and the other one a lawyer, CPA accountant, you know. And he's talking with his sons at Christmas one year, and they're telling him how much they appreciate everything he's done for them. And he says, oh, I'll tell you what, boys, you know, you don't have to do anything. I'll tell you what, just as a token of your appreciation, when I pass, I want you to put – each of you put $10,000 in my casket. And sure enough, the time finally comes. And the accountant goes up and he puts $10,000 in the casket. The doctor goes up likewise and puts the $10,000 in the casket. The attorney goes up. He reaches in his pocket. He pulls out an envelope, places it in the casket, and he takes the $20,000 out and puts it in his pocket. He walks away. His brothers come up to him and say, what was going on? He said, I gave Dad a check. I wrote it for $30,000. I took the – so, you know, hey, by the way, I think it's in Henry the Sixth or something like that, or that the dissidents are getting ready to overthrow the monarchy or whatever. And one of them says, the first thing we'll have to do is kill all the lawyers. And, you know, Shakespeare wrote it, but I'm not sure whether he meant it sarcastically or was just daydreaming, you know? But I, at any rate, I certainly would never encourage anyone to kill all the lawyers. So, most of them probably.
So, you told a joke earlier, and so I'll tell a joke that I actually heard from Eddie Lampert, who owns, you know, Sears Corporation, Sears Holdings Corporation. Yeah. We talked about that before. And there's a little Semitic piece to it, but you know, he's Jewish, Eddie, and he talked about how, when he grew up, his mother, being a Jewish mother, really wanted him to be a doctor and attorney, like his, like his brothers and sisters.
Sure.
And he said, so, you know, she for years was kind of sad that I didn't become a doctor and attorney. And he said, and then I bought – so at that time, he bought Kmart and then Sears. So it was the third largest retailer in the country. Mm-hmm. So he said – so I came home and said, Mom, I bought the third largest retailer in the country. And she said, you're still not a doctor.
Well, I hear you. I'm not sure what I'm hearing, but I get it.
Yeah,
I get it. Expectations are expectations. And even when they're exceeded, they're not necessarily the expectations that were intended to be realized.
Yes.
So – yeah, well, you know, that's a pretty good one. Well, at least she didn't want him to be a lawyer,
right? Well, you know,
we don't need that. But what's going on in the world aside from the news and politics and all that stuff? And that's a great transition for us to move to our second segment, which is more on the success factor in terms of what it takes to be able to get things done and who's doing them now. You know, your experience with Eddie Lampert, Eddie Lampert, must have been a real eye opener to you, to be engaged with an organization and with individuals that were really excelling so much in terms of their business opportunities.
Yeah.
Now those companies were all traded on
New York
Stock Exchange, one of the stock exchanges. And there's a lot of other rules and things that come involved with that. And I thought that it was very interesting this past week to see that Elon Musk is still getting in trouble about those tweets and how much they had affected the economy. And I, you know, when he stepped out on the edge and started talking about things that were going to happen, that they were going to be, I can't remember what it was, but like, one of his things, this is outside of the tweets, was that they were going to be producing 20,000 vehicles a week or something like that by the end of 2018. And by the end of 2018, they were producing 20,000 vehicles, but that was annually.
Yes.
You know, when people, in business, start talking about what their business is doing and which way they're going. Certainly, when they're a publicly traded company, it has a tremendous amount of impact on people. But beyond that, if you're involved in a business enterprise, you really do need to be cautious about what you share with other people.
That's Elon Musk calling, Wes.
Yes, it is. I'm going to have to get back to him too. Unfortunately. As I understand it, he's getting a big, going to be in big trouble anyways.
Yeah, it would seem that we talked about that on the radio show at some point, when he did that. And I think your steps were, you know, if I did that, they'd haul me off in handcuffs, but it turns out it might just happen to Mr. Musk as well.
Yeah. Well, it may very well happen. You know, there's another podcast. What is it? Seth Rogen. That Elon Musk was on smoking pot.
Yeah,
that was confusing too because you know he has very high security clearance because of the activities that is SpaceX. And that's like a no-no with regards to the federal contracts. And by the way, it doesn't matter where you are or what side you are on about smoking marijuana or not or any of that stuff. If you're not allowed to do it by your employment.
Right.
And since it's still against the federal law to do, it's certainly not, when you have protected classes. It's not one of the protected classes that you smoke.
It's not a disability,
pot.
Right.
No, it's not considered that. So it's kind of confusing, but you know, it almost seems like he's really imploding.
I would agree with you. I would agree that he is. And you know, it's unfortunate because he's done a lot of really pretty amazing things, right? He's, you know, obviously the Tesla is the most popular electric car currently. Mm-hmm. The SpaceX thing, they have the rocket that lands itself back and can be reused.
But they had that before he did it. They had it before that. I believe it was NASA had it or something. But the whole point was he had the publicity machine jumping up and down about it.
He launched his car into space. Yeah.
You know, very popular guy.
He is. But you know what? I mean, I don't know if you've seen Wes, I would think you'd be super interested in this. He built these batteries for your home. Mm. And what they do is they're expensive, okay? Mm-hmm. But they during the evening when electricity is cheaper because electricity rates go down at night.
I didn't know that.
Because maybe it's not the evening, maybe it's early morning.
Even for residential?
Yeah, residential. Huh. It buys the electricity when it's cheaper and stores it in these batteries. And then it uses the less expensive electricity when electricity rates are higher.
Does it have any attrition in there? You know, does it degrade any of the
– he says no. But, I mean, he also, you know, said they were going to make 20,000 cars a year.
Yeah,
But so, I mean, and so you get these batteries for your house, and they also can hold enough power, depending on how many you buy, that if the power goes out, you can have them set up to last up to a week where they will supply your home with power as opposed to a generator. So you don't need gas. You don't need anything. It's pretty neat. You can see them at the mall. You know, they have one.
Really?
Yeah. They have one at Somerset, you know, in the Tesla little thing in there. They also They have the, they call them the wall. But I would, you know, it's a money savings device, Wes. I would think you'd have those at your house.
It sounds like I don't know what the initial investment is though. I'd have to amortize the cost over my lifetime probably.
It's thousands of dollars.
And I'm not going to live forever. So,
so you can also buy those and then put solar panels on your house. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then it'll take the solar and store it. And so you can, you know, and you can actually sell the electricity from your solar back to DTE in our area.
You know, it sounds to me like somebody needs to scope out a little business plan where you're offering all those and you're showing what the savings is and you're going door to door like aluminum siding salespeople saying, hey, you know what we need your house as a advertising medium demonstrate what we're going to do here.
Yes, you sold your business. You have a little bit of free time, right? You're an entrepreneurial guy. You got some kids you could send around the neighborhood to.
I do have some free time. That's an interesting concept. I'll have to. You know what? I bet it's overly regulated. Because we now have a Democratic governor in Michigan. And I'm sure that they've already figured out a way for it not to work.
Hey, speaking of the Democratic governor, and I know we're talking about success factor part, but did you see they've already announced 15 indictments on the Flint water?
You know, I do, but I have it. I would be really surprised if anyone intended that to happen.
I would agree with you. I don't think anybody's. There are people in the world that are truly evil, but I don't believe anybody involved there was, well, we don't care if people die from lead. And you know, we talked about this, I think, on the show before. And actually, adults aren't affected by lead. It's children, which is, you know, even kind of more dastardly.
I hear you.
But I don't really disagree. But intention does not always mean that you're not guilty of, you know.
You know, I think it was a very unfortunate circumstance that took place there and that there may be some people who were negligent or culpable, certainly if there is going to be a problem with it, I think it will be more in the concept of a cover-up.
Yeah, well, I think you're right.
Or the concept of lying under oath.
Right. It's like the Ford Pinto, right? Nobody built that car to burst into flame if it had a collision from the rear. Yeah. The problem was when the engineers found out or the leadership found out, they chose not to repair it.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, did anybody go to jail over that?
I'm not sure. I know there's that famous, when the attorney produced the memo within Ford saying the cost of litigation would be less than the cost of the recall. So
yeah,
changed the industry.
That probably was a poor decision.
Yeah. Who would put that in writing?
Well, that's an important consideration. Just like telling people what you think your business is going to do. You got to be careful of that. You got to also be careful what you tell yourself, you know?
Sure. And you know what? I mean, that's – I don't want to call him inexperienced because certainly he's far more experienced than I am or ever will be, I'm sure. But, you know, in the private sector, I think we've all – I'm sure you had people that worked for you and I had people that worked for me and people that I work for where they say, hey, are we going to be able to do this? And you go, yeah, we'll be all right. But in your head, you're like, I think we'll be all right. But you know, and I think that's almost natural, right? People tell their quote unquote boss that kind of stuff.
You know, in business, the people who succeed and really in life are the people who are willing to push the envelope and be unconventional.
I read that in your book.
You have to. Oh, you read the book?
I did. Well, I listened to the book.
I
bought it on
audiobooks.
Audiobooks, yeah.
Great.
Wes does not read it, though. If you want to hear Wes's voice, it is not Wes reading it.
And that's true.
A lot of words in the book Wes doesn't know. So.
Yeah, right. Well, the big reason is that it was going to cost as much to have me edit it than it would have cost to have a professional reader read it. And that's good to know. You know, I think we may have mentioned this already, but it did hit the Wall Street Journal bestseller list. The USA Today bestseller list, and it was actually number 2 on Barnes & Noble, right between Howard Stern and Michelle Obama.
Oh, we did talk about that, yeah.
Which, you know, I think they really put me there just to keep the two separated. They probably didn't want – they'd get a little handsy or something, you know?
They might get along. You don't know. They could be friends.
Howard may be a Democrat. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
I think Howard is a Democrat.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
You know, he's very focused on the free speech part of the First Amendment.
You know,
did you ever see his movie, the Howard Stern movie? It's kind of humorous.
You know, I think it was like on cable or something at one point, and I watched a little bit of it. He played himself, as I recall,
but
he changed his hairdo or something. Yeah. But I have absolutely no recollection of anything that was in it except something to do with a horse or something that people were riding or I don't know. Anyways, it was very confusing to me, but it was in the background, as
okay.
They say.
And you know, what we didn't do as we started this, Wes, you didn't talk about the name of your book for the folks that are listening.
Big Things Have Small Beginnings. And it's sold lots and lots of copies so far, and we're really happy about that. And I've got a lot of real nice reviews. If you buy the book and if you decide to read it and you like it, I hope you'll write a review. And if you read the book and you don't like it, I hope you won't write a review. But
and it's available, right? It's soft cover there as you have paperback. It's available. Like I said, I'm listening to it on audiobook. And
yep.
Is it – it's Kindle e-reader as well. I think somebody told me they had it on.
It is. It's on all the platforms that are out there, really. You know, Amazon obviously is the biggest one. But, you know, from it's on the on Google and every all the different platforms we put it on, and you know, it's been going very, very well. I've been very pleased with how well it's been received. I actually have had four publishers contact me because I self-published this, but I've had four publishers contact me since then, and you know, so we're going back and forth on that.
Real question: so to publish your own book, did you buy a book on how to publish a book?
No.
Okay, because I mean that seems like that probably exists, right? There's
well,
probably...
you know what? I think I may have, but I didn't read it.
Oh well,
you know. In fact, now that you bring that up, I think it's even on my phone right now. I think I bought the e-edition, you know, mm-hmm. and it didn't really get there for me. But that was part of it, you know. I recognized that it was important for me not to follow the conventional way of publishing a book and of promoting it.
And interesting.
That, and that I would have to, if I was going to be able to best my competition, I'd have to not play by those rules, but by my own rules. And that's really was a lot of what allowed me to get it where it was at.
You know, to that point, and that unusual that we're going to talk about guns again for a second, mm-hmm. but, you know, there's a famous quote from Gaston Glock, who invented the, mm-hmm. the Glock pistol, that, I'm going to butcher the quote a little bit because it's been a while since that I knew nothing about firearms was my greatest asset.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. You know, one of the things that I did was I went around and I spoke at a lot of small organizations, Rotary clubs and the like, at about 40 or 50 different venues. And I did not sell my book. I gave it away. And I gave it away to everybody, and I was able to garner a substantial number of reviews up front. Now, there were three ways to get reviews, really. One was to go out and buy them, which if you get caught, you're in big trouble.
Yeah, it seems like that'd be a problem.
So it's not worth doing that. And then the other way was to, you know, just wait and see what happens. But I thought to myself, I bet there's a lot of great books that no one has ever read.
That's actually a quote you should put in your next book. There's probably a lot of great books that nobody's ever
read. So I thought about that. I mean, you know, of course they say, well, you want to have a successful book, write a great book. Yeah, but I believe that, but I also believe that that doesn't mean you're going to be successful with a book.
And I think there's a certain amount of cachet that people develop. I mean, so I'm a Stephen King fan, right? But mm-hmm. that doesn't mean every book that Stephen King wrote is really a good book, right?
Right.
And so, but his cachet makes people think. Same with movies, right? A director. Scorsese directs a movie.
Well, we were talking about Sean Connery a minute ago.
Oh, yeah, right.
And you're absolutely right. There's never been a movie that Sean Connery has been in that wasn't a great movie.
Well, he play a dragon in a movie. I think that one.
That was a good movie, too. I even liked that. But I have felt that way about Clint Eastwood for an awful long time.
Oh, yeah, Clint Eastwood.
Until he made those damn monkey movies, you know, that orangutan thing. And then he had that Bridges of Something
Loose.
Count. You know, come on. You know, those were just devastating to me.
Wow.
I'm so glad that he's got back to his roots where he's shooting guns and kicking people off his porch.
You know, he cries in Bridges of Madison County.
Oh, my God.
And they had to – that was hard to film because, you know, he had his tear duct surgically removed. So it was tough.
Did he really?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, I was very upset though when that happened because it was just a little too much to handle.
You know, I have a friend that always said Harrison Ford's never been in a bad movie. You know, for all the Harrison, I mean,
well, he was actually in one bad movie. It's called Force 10 from Navarone.
It was a sequel
to The Guns of Navarone, and that movie not so good.
Okay.
And Harrison Ford was in that, but other than that one.
American Graffiti was his first, you know, he was driving the Project X.
I agree. He's always got been in good things. I certainly like his Tom Clancy roles.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That he's played. Those were always good. But at any rate, you need to be unconventional. By the way, unconventional just means that you're willing to innovate, do new things. Try new things. And nothing great has ever been done that hasn't included innovation. That's like a fundamental thing in order to really drive success. Because, you know, if everybody else is playing by the same rules, you know, a few months ago, some people that you play poker with, I was playing poker with them, and I don't pay attention.
We play for fun, for anybody listening.
Oh yeah, it's like $10 to buy in. By the way, I've researched this, and it's very legal.
Oh, that's good. Okay. Well, then we play poker. Okay.
As long as no one's taking a cut on it, and you're not doing it in a public place.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Yeah.
So at any rate, they giving me a hard time and not paying attention. So I said, okay, I'm all right. I'm going to pay attention. But the only way I'm going to really be able to pay attention is if I'm allowed to cheat. Now, I fully recognize that if I get caught, you know, then it'll count.
Yeah,
but if I don't get caught, I don't think it should count. And, you know, if you cheat in a golf tournament and you get caught, you lose. You get disqualified from the tournament, so you lose. That's the worst thing
that
can happen.
But you lose anyway.
Yeah, that's the worst thing that can happen. So anyways, so I cheated and, you know, I won and then, you know, Mike lost his, you know.
Oh, yeah.
He's still
upset
about it.
I was there. He's still kind of
mad about
it. Oh, you were
there.
Yeah, no, I was. I came in third. You wouldn't give me any money. but no, Mike was a little upset. But, you know, euchre, I don't, I played euchre a lot growing up. But one of the things in euchre, and this is, I got to figure out how to turn this into a rule for life. But if your opponent goes alone and they get all the tricks, they get 4 points. If you renege, they only get 2 points. So it's to your advantage if you believe your opponent is going to get all four.
To renege.
Because you hold them at two. And I've always thought that that's like a loophole in the rules, right?
But you have to get caught reneging, right?
Right. So you got to, it has to be, and you can't catch yourself.
Yeah, well, that's very confusing.
Yes.
That's very confusing. But, you know, I would never encourage anyone to break the law, but breaking rules or conventions
rules
within in your industry, you know, if you're in an industry that's, you know, maybe you're running recording studios, and if the standard recording studios are not open on Sundays, maybe you should be open on Sundays. It whatever it is, you know, countering those moves are very, very important. Just like there's contrarian investment strategies for the market. Lots of times those contrarian strategies work out real well. In other words, when people are selling, that's when you buy. That's a contrary strategy, which makes perfect sense. Unfortunately, it's not human nature to sell something when it's going up.
Right.
You know, but that's the time to sell. Because you're making money then.
Well, that's a really good point, right? And you see a lot of people. So when the last economic downturn, and we won't get political about it, but I'm also a car guy, and really I was a car guy first. And so, you know, Chrysler Hemi powered cars got to insane amounts, right? And actually, the uglier they are, the rarer they are, the more valuable they are. And so a lot of cases, the ones that no one wanted when they were new are the ones that have the, you know,
sure.
Oh, I want the car without air conditioning because that most of them, you know, weird stuff. But anyway, so. A lot of guys were even like taking out mortgages and second mortgages on their house to buy them at $100,000 because everybody was saying they were going to get to $200,000 or they were going to get to $300,000 or whatever. But then the market collapsed.
Yeah.
And then those same cars dropped back to $50,000. And the point was the guy that would have only made $20,000 on it could have made $20,000 on it. But the guy that tried to hold on to it – and those cars, by the way, still aren't back there. Real estate's recovered and other things. The cars have not inflated to that rate.
There's always been – well, not always, but speculation always leads to a bubble.
Yeah.
There's the original or close to the original, I assume, or the original documented big bubble, which was the tulips in the Netherlands and Holland, where they were being traded at astronomical prices, the bulbs, and you know, the next day they were completely worthless. So, you know, creating that demand for something, well, just ask our buddy over there at Tesla, ask Elon.
Yeah.
You know, his stock went sky high when he was telling everybody all the successes he was going to have and all the predictions and all this other stuff. You know, there's an old thing in most offering circulars about investments and stuff where they'll say past performance is no guarantee of future success.
Yeah. And like Franklin Mint plates.
Whatever. Yeah. Okay. Exactly. Or Beanie Babies.
Mm. Oh yeah. Think of the people that. There's a picture of a couple in court in like 1996 getting divorced and they're dividing their Beanie Babies. Like that's a famous picture. That's a real thing.
You know what? They became worthless shortly thereafter too.
Yeah. My wife's grandmother passed away not long ago and she had collected, you know, hundreds of them, right?
Yeah. Well, she had put all of her wealth in Beanie Babies or substantial portion.
I'm investing in Beanie Babies. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so my daughter has some and my son, you know, has some and they play with them because they are literally worthless.
Yeah. Well, hopefully. We will learn some lessons from these things.
Yeah.
And in terms of trying to understand what's going on in the world a little bit, it's difficult sometimes. But I want to point out one thing that I think people should really give some consideration to. This whole thing with the Mueller investigation is at this point not focused on what the investigation was about. It's focused on how people responded to the investigation and the inference that the that there were crimes committed at that point. And let's think back a little bit. What got Bill Clinton in trouble with our friend Monica, the one without the ears?
That he lied about it.
That he lied about it under oath.
Right.
Right. Do you think he should have even been asked that question? What the hell did that have to do with anything to do with running our government?
No, and you know? I agree with that, you know, fundamentally. I think that that's the nature of our system, though, right? We've created a system where the opposing party tries to, and I would go one step further, and I've heard people say this, but I believe that if, let's say Hillary had won, okay, and I don't shiver too bad, Wes, but let's say Hillary had won, and the same accusations were made about Hillary that have been made about President Trump, that the flip side and the same results were seen, that the Republicans would be arguing as hard or harder against it as the Democrats are. And that's what's wrong with our system, right? Is the hypocrisy knows no bounds.
Yeah, but you know, just a little while ago, the Senate and the House and the executive branch were controlled by the Republicans. And I didn't see any hearings or special counsel appointed to investigate Hillary Clinton's servers or whatever.
Well, they didn't need to because they knew there were no laws broken.
You know what? Maybe so. Well, what about our good friend Richard Nixon? Mm. You know, I've never really understood what he did wrong. Yeah, they were sitting there around in a room and they were talking about stuff. And he said, well, we could get $1 million in cash if we needed it. So I guess just the idea that he was having a conversation or an exercise about the possibility that that was considered collusion collusion. I don't know. Conspiracy.
Conspiracy. Yeah. Conspiracy.
Conspiracy. You know, I don't know about you, but if every time I thought of the possibilities before I decided on a solution, I think I'd be in really big trouble.
Yeah. Fortunately, we can't be tried for our thoughts.
Well, but when you think you're in a private setting with a friend or a colleague mm-hmm. or an employee and you're batting back and forth what the answers are to a problem, I don't know. I have a hard time because it wasn't based upon policy that Nixon got thrown out. It was based upon how he thought about and talked about a possibility of something that he knew nothing about when it happened, but was thrown in his lap and was scratching his head.
To be fair, though, Nixon did resign.
True.
So
he had already been impeached.
Right.
Which, by the way, just means that they're then going to vote on whether to throw you out.
Clinton was impeached.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
But see, I think that's the difference. And you don't hear me fault Clinton for much. I'm a huge Bill Clinton fan, but maybe fault isn't the right word because I'm not saying he was wrong. But he was, you know, previously, if somebody was going to be impeached in the Nixon era, he resigned because he felt that meant he would be removed from office, right? So rather – it's sort of like resigning instead of being fired.
Well, the impeachment proceedings go on in the House and then they vote on whether to throw you out in the Senate. And since Nixon counted the votes in the Senate and he knew what was going to happen. And Bill – if I may call him Bill counted the votes in the Senate and knew that he wasn't going to get thrown out.
Right.
So he should have just kept his mouth shut.
So Nixon was president when I was born. So I don't, you know, I don't really remember Nixon very well. But the thing with Clinton, I've had the opportunity to see him live speak at an event.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see he's so charismatic that you can see in his mind, he's like, oh, I'm not going to. Why would I possibly worry? I mean, there's no way and he's right, right?
I mean, I think we call that arrogance in the Republican Party. I know that you just call it, you know, charisma in the Democratic Party, but it's a different thing.
If there were a Republican president that I found as charismatic, Reagan's a great example, very charismatic guy. I mean, he was a professional actor. It's cool. But you know, and really, George H.W. Bush was, you know, I think he could have been a two-term president if it hadn't been for that whole no new taxes and then.
That was not the problem with George H.W. The problem with him was Ross Perot. running at the same time. And Ross Perot was further right than Bush was. So he took votes away. And if you looked at Clinton's percentage of win, so to speak, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, it didn't go to the Electoral College. So I guess you can say that that's, you know, right. That, but in those states where Clinton did win, Ross Perot took away enough votes that if they had gone to Bush, he would have had mm-hmm. them. So, you know, in 6 months before that election, he had the highest popularity rate of any president that since they started counting that stuff, because he had just won the war over in Iraq, the first Iraq war. And it was, you know, it was almost a fait accompli that he would be reelected.
Right.
And so one thing, he didn't go all out.
Right, right. Yeah.
Ross Perot should never have been. And, you know, Ross Perot's running mate at the time.
Who was it? I don't even remember his running mate.
General Stockton, I think it was.
Yeah.
Who had been in charge of the Strategic Air Command during his tenure in the Air Force. During the debate, they asked him, you know, well, why are you here? And his response was, I don't really know why I'm here. You know, so, I mean, that was just a.
You know, to your point, though, I think, you know, that goes – we've talked about this before. I think that goes to Hillary's loss too. I think she didn't try that hard because she was so confident that she would win.
We don't call it confident in the Republican Party. I know you do. Mm. We call it arrogance, and that's okay.
That's okay. I'm just using the same thing for H.W. Bush. Then he was arrogant.
I don't think he was arrogant.
Well, I mean, it's the same argument. I don't know if you're a Simpsons fan or not, but there's a great episode of The Simpsons where H.W. Bush moves in next door to the Simpson family.
Oh.
And he's writing his memoir, okay? And in the last line they show him write is, and having completed all my goals as president in one term, I saw no need for a second.
Well, you know that he's writing his own story. That's exactly what Napoleon said too. Churchill, and Napoleon's line was, history will be kind to me because I expect to write it.
Well, that's a factual statement.
Yes, it most certainly is. You know, I don't think we have time for this, but the movie W.
Mm. I've seen it.
I felt
bad for him in that movie.
Everyone that I know who's a liberal loves that movie, and everyone that I know who's a conservative loves that movie. I mean, the things that they make fun of, I find endearing.
Sure.
You know? Even when he's choking on the pretzels. I mean, who among us hasn't choked on a pretzel?
I'll tell you what, he's another, I changed my opinion of him after he was in office. I saw him speak at the mm-hmm. same venue, but years later is where I saw Clinton speak. Mm-hmm. And he was quite charismatic in person.
Yes, absolutely.
And funny.
Yeah.
And he told this great joke about how his first day out of office, he decided he was going to take the dog for a walk. And he hadn't gone in his neighborhood in Texas, you know.
Yeah.
And he hadn't walked the dog in 8 years or 12 years because he'd been governor before, you know, whatever. Yeah. And he said, and I now found myself picking up what had been hurled at me for the previous 8 years. And I found it endearing.
I certainly agree with you. And I heard H.W. speak.
I heard him speak as well.
At the Detroit Economic Club, actually. And I also heard George W. there. And Oliver North, we talked about him today. I have a book at home signed by him someplace.
You know who else I heard speak and I was not a fan of, but she was very – was Condoleezza Rice.
Mm, I did not.
Yeah, I heard her speak and she was very interesting. This goes against my political beliefs, but I did see Hillary speak. Hillary is not charismatic. She might be brilliant. I don't – but she was not a charismatic speaker. And I think, you know, you're going to be president, you have to have some charisma. And I think, you know,
I think you have to be likable at least.
Well, yeah. No, I agree. And you know, and I think when you have Bill Clinton, who's probably one of the most charismatic people of the last century, and that's who you're married to, you probably don't have to rely on a lot of charisma because
– That's true.
You know, I'm guessing they didn't not get a lot of tables at restaurants and such, you know.
No, I think you're probably right. Well, I want to thank you for listening to this podcast today. And we'll be releasing it shortly. And if you're listening to it on a podcast, it's also going to be available on Facebook. And if you're watching it on Facebook, it's also available on a podcast. We're set up with all the different various podcast formats that there are out there. And certainly, Apple Podcast is probably about the most popular one. We're on that as well. So please check us out.
Always fun to be here.
Thank you.